Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formative introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Lamed Ches. We quote from our Mishnah, Shor Shel Yisrael, Shenogach, Shor Shel Knani, Potter. If a Jewish-owned animal gores the animal owned by a Kenani, by a Canaanite, or an idol worshiper, so the Jew is exempt from compensating. The Gemara asks, Amri, Mimonafshach, either way you look at things, our Mishnah is difficult to understand. E Re'ehu Davka. We cited this pasuk in our last shiur. The term Re'ehu is found in the pasuk that describes the animal that gores. And it says, Ki Igach Shor Ish es Shor Re'ehu, when one's animal gores the animal of his fellow, of his Re'ehu. And the word Re'ehu implies the ox of another Jew. So if you take the pasuk of Re'ehu to be precise, dafka, literal, then the Kenani ki nogach Yisrael nami liftar, then it should be such that if a Canaanite ox gores the Jewish-owned ox, the Canaanite should be exempt. Namely, the pasuk that says payment is made for damages is only when it's Re'ehu, when it's between two Jews. But if it's a goring that doesn't involve two Jews, but a Jew and a Gentile, then just like if the Jew goring Gentile-owned ox is exempt, Gentile goring Jewish-owned ox, Gentile, should be exempt. V'i Re'ehu lav davka, if the word Re'ehu is not to be taken literally or in a precise, specific fashion, but just an expression meaning fellow man, afilu di Yisrael ki nogach de Kenani nechayev, then it should be that when a Jewish-owned animal gores the Canaanite-owned animal, the Jew should be obligated to compensate. Why then does the Mishnah make a distinction when the Jew is the aggressor, so it is there is exemption, and when the Jew is the victim, there's full payment? Omar Rabbi Avol. Notice we have a triangle and a double underline on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh heading, the topic heading and structural note that are combined into one. We explain that the triangle represents Shnei Mikrois. The double underline highlights the expression Omar Kra, or you'll see later, Mehocha, where a verse is cited. So our Gemara points out, there are Shnei Mikrois Hamalamdim Al-Kach, the Shor Shel Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shel Nochri Potter. Two psukim indicating that Jewish-owned animal, that gores idol worshipper-owned animal, the Jew is exempt. The Gemara. Omar Rabbi Avol, Omar Kra. The Pasuk says, Omar Vayemoided Eretz, Ra'a Vayater Goyim. The Gemara explains, Ra'a, the Almighty, saw Sheva Mitzvahs, the seven commandments, Shekiblu Alehem B'nei Noach, that the descendants of Noach accepted upon them. We refer to them as the Noahide laws. Kevan Shelo Kaimo. In the course of time, the Almighty noticed that they didn't observe the seven teachings, the seven laws. Omad vehitir mamonon l'Israel. As a result of their not adhering to the seven commandments, the Almighty, as a form of, we'll say, retribution, said that their properties, their money, is free for the picking, so to speak, for the Jews. Let's keep it in our context and say that in the case of damages done by Jewish-owned animal to the idol worshiper-owned animal, so the Jew will be exempt. As they say to the victim in this case, too bad. And that's because you, as an idol worshiper, resisted accepting the seven Noahide laws. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mehocha. Rabbi Yochanan cites another pasuk that says, "Ofia mehar poron." The pasuk itself, it says that the Almighty came forth from Poron. Mi poron hofia momoinam li Yisrael. And the drosha, the explanation of that pasuk is the Almighty came forth, so to speak, from Poron. Poron is a region, an area where idol worshippers lived. It's often, you'll find in commentaries associated with the land of the Ishmaelites. He came forth from there, offering them, the nations of the world, to accept the Torah with all its benefits and obligations. And they did not accept the Torah. So at that point where the nations of the world rejected acceptance of the Torah, so the Almighty then revealed their monies to the Jewish people who did accept the Torah. The word Hofia Mamona means he revealed their money and allowed it to be for the Jews. Once again, in this context, that if a Jewish-owned animal gores an idol worshipper's animal, no compensation need be made. Tanya Nami Hochi. And now we have a Tanaic source that bears out that which the Amoroyim, Rabbi Avo, and Rabbi Yochanan taught us. Shor Shel Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shel Knani, Jewish-owned animal gores idol worshipper Canaanite-owned animal, Potter, the Jew is exempt. Shor Shel Knani Shenogach Shor Shel Yisrael, in the opposite direction, then Bein Tam, Bein Muad, Mishan Mesik Shon, the Canaanite will have to pay whether his animal is a Muad, even if it's a Tam, even if it's a docile type animal, the full payment for damages must be made. Shenemar, and note how the source cites the psukim we saw above. Omad v'yamoided oretz, ro v'yater goyim. V'yomer hofia mehar poron. Two psukim are cited to seemingly tell us the same thing. So the Gemara asks, my v'yomer, what's the necessity of having the second pasuk? The Gemara answers, v'chi tema, you might have thought, hai omad v'yamoided oretz miboyolei l'chederav matono u'chederav Yosef. Maybe the purpose or the teaching of that pasuk, Omad v'yamoided oretz, is for Rav Matana or Rav Yosef's point. You'll notice if you skim ahead in our Gemara markings, our marked Gemara, you'll notice bow ties. Rav Matana's name, he has a teaching derived from the pasuk Omad v'yamoided oretz. Rav Yosef, likewise, a few lines later, also has a teaching based on that pasuk. So you might have thought that, well, Omad v'yamoided, that pasuk is used for something else. And I would not have a source then for this idea of Shor Shel Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shel Knani is Potter. Therefore, Toshma Hofia Mehar Poron. Mi Poron Hofia Mamonon Yisrael. From Poron, from the Almighty's offer, and there going the idol worshippers' rejection of the Torah, so the Almighty said, okay, then let the Jews have the advantage. My Rav Matana. What is the reference to Rav Matana's teaching that we just mentioned? The Omar Rav Matana, Omad Vayemoded Oretz, Rav Hule. Rav Matana cites that pasuk and says, Ma Ra. It says in the pasuk that that the Almighty saw. Ra'a Sheva Mitzvahs. Shenitztavu lohem b'nei Noach, he saw that there were seven mitzvahs that the descendants of Noah were commanded to fulfill, velo kaimum, and they did not fulfill them. And as a result, omad vehigla oisa me'alad mosam, the nations of the world were then exiled from their original dwellings, their original land locations. Rashi cites from the Torah, psukim, indicating the, say, population transfers. And that is a result of major shifts in the Gentile, the heathen population, was a result of their not fulfilling the seven mitzvahs, the seven Noahide laws. Umay mashma dahai vayater lishna dagluyehu. From where do we know that in the pasuk cited, vayater is an expression indicating exiled? Ksiv hacha vayater goyim. In this pasuk we see that expression. Uksiv hasam, in a totally different context we see, and let me just cite this, the context has to do with different types of locusts that the Torah describes as being kosher for consumption, for Jewish consumption. And in that context, the pasuk says, "Lenater bohen ala oretz." Part of the physical description of those chagovim, those locusts, it mentions that pasuk, "Lenater bohen ala oretz," which the umetargem, metargem means the Aramaic translation, explanation of "Lenater bohen ala oretz," is "Lekafse bohen ala ara," to jump from off the ground. The locusts, which in a family of insects, we associate with them grasshoppers and other similar creatures. They have, we'll refer to their having jumping legs. They have a set of legs that enable them to jump at quite a distance. The Pasuk in Hebrew said linater, and the Aramaic lekafsa is to jump, says to jump from one location to another. Hence, in the Pasuk cited by Rav Matona, vayater, the Pasuk had said vayater goyim, they were caused to be dislocated or relocated from where they originally were, just like the jumping legs of the locust enables it to change its location. My de Rav Yosef, reference above was made to Rav Yosef's use of the pasuk Omad Vayamoided Oretz. What is that a reference to? The Omar Rav Yosef, Omad Vayamoided Oretz, Ra Vahule. Ma Ra, what did the Almighty see? Ra Sheva Mitzvahs Shekiblu Alam B'nei Noach, Velo Kaimum. He saw, the Almighty saw the seven mitzvahs that the Noahides had accepted, but in the course of time did not fulfill. Omad vehitiron lahem. Well, he says, if you're not keeping them, it's allowed. It's allowed. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Because you didn't observe something, so then you don't have to observe it anymore. Is gure iskar? Is gure is an Aramaic word that in Hebrew we would say sahar, paid, profited. Benefited, so that this statement doesn't make sense. Because they didn't fulfill the mitzvahs, then they are rewarded. Isguri isgar, they're rewarded with not having to keep them anymore. Yimkei motzinu chotein isgar. We then find that the sinner is rewarded. Now, and that can't be. So, what is Rav Yosef's intention when he says that they velo kaimum vehitiru lahen? What does that mean? Omar mor brei doravno lomar. It means, what Rav Yosef means to say is, shafilu mekaimenoson, even if they attempt to fulfill them, once historically they had simply rejected them and violated them, now if they want to fulfill them, ein mekablam aleim sachar, they will not receive reward. Rashi says, "Rav Shafilu Mekaymen Oisan Sharei Einom Mitzuvin Avol Meonshin Lo Potron." They're not commanded. However, we're not going to say, like we thought, that they are not subject to punishment. Not true. They're not commanded to fulfill them anymore, but if they violate those mitzvahs, then they will be punishable. So, what is Rav Yosef's teaching? That even if they attempt to fulfill them, having had already rejected them, it's too late now, and they won't get reward for their fulfillment. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that really so that they don't get reward, that the Gentiles don't get reward for fulfilling the seven Noahide laws?" V'atanya, we have the following source, Rabbi Meir Oimer, "Minay shafilu nochri v'oisek b'torah shukakayin gadol." From where do we know that a heathen that engages in Torah study, that he is like the high priest? Talmud Lomar Shiyase Oisam Ha'adam V'Chai Bohem. Kohenim Ulevim Yisraim Lo Nemar. It doesn't say in this pasuk regarding the fulfillment of the Torah a reference to the different strata of the Jewish community, Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. Elo Adam. The pasuk uses the word Ha'adam. Ha'alamadata. This shows us Shafilu Nochri. V'yoisek b'torah harehu k'kayin gadol. That even a Nochri, even a heathen, if he engages in Torah study, he's viewed as the high priest. Well, that would seem to indicate that he definitely receives reward for his keeping of the mitzvos. Amri, the Gemara responds, Ein mekablim aleim sachar kimitzuva v'yoisa. What was said before, that even if they fulfill the mitzvahs, they don't get reward, it means they don't get the high quality reward of one who is commanded and fulfills. Elo kimi she'eno mitzuva v'yoisa. Rather, they do receive reward, but the lower quality reward that is due to those that voluntarily fulfill things that they're not commanded to fulfill. Rabbi Chanina tells us that greater is the one who fulfills from the vantage point of being commanded to fulfill, more so than one who voluntarily fulfills mitzvos. There are explanations as to why that is. Why is one who fulfills as a result of being obligated to fulfill considered greater than one who voluntarily fulfills? But that's a subject of discussion on another occasion and elsewhere. But for our purposes, let it be clear that greater in terms of reward is one who fulfills from the standpoint of being commanded to fulfill. And that is what Rav Yosef was referring to when he said that now that the Bnei Noach don't keep the seven Noahide laws, Hitiran Lahem, they're viewed as being not commanded in the sense of not able to receive the high level reward that they would have received had they not violated them. Tonu Rabbanan. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a note on the side that reads the Nose Oy Binyan Shorshi Yisrael Shenogach Shorshal Akum Shupoter. We're going to see more on this topic of the Jewish owned animal that gores the idol worshiper owned animal, where we see the exemption for the Jew for having to compensate for damages. The Tanaic source that you see in a frame tells us a story. Ukvar Sholcha Malchus Romi Shnei Sardutos Eitzel Chachmei Yisrael. The Romans sent two officers to the rabbis, the wise men of the Jewish people, Limdunu Toraschem, with the request, the command, teach us your Torah. Karu Vishana Vishilshu. There is found in the commentaries that this expression is a reference to the scriptures, the Mishnayos, and the Talmud. if you take it, if you read this expression literally, it means they read it, they reviewed it a second time, and even a third time. The Tosfos addresses a question found based on the Gemara in Masechta Chagiga that says that a Jew is not to teach an idol worshiper Torah. How then could the Chachmei Yisrael in this story have taught them? So one of the answers that Tosfos gives is they did so. They taught them under duress. The Roman officials had forced them to do so. Let's continue in our Gemara. B'shas p'tirasan, upon their departure, Amar Lahem, these Roman officials told the rabbis, "Dik daknu b'chol tirashem v'emes hu." We have read your Torah thoroughly, and it is true. We'll call it a book of truth. Chutz midover zeh sha'atem oimrim, with the exception of the following that you say, and it's what we've seen already several times so far today. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach shor shel Kanani poter, Jewish animal, the aggressor, resultant damage to heathen animal, Jew is exempt. Shel Kanani shenagach shor shel Yisrael, in the opposite direction where the Canaanite animal is the aggressor, bein tam bein muad mishan nesek shalem, he Canaanite has to provide restitution to the Jew, even if the Canaanite owned animal was a docile animal. The Roman officials raised the question that we saw before in the Gemara, Mimanavshach, either way you look at things, E Re'ehu Dafka, if the portion of the Torah that deals with the requirement to compensate, and it says Re'ehu, fellow Jew, is literal and specific and precise, then afilu diknani ki nogach Yisrael liftar, then when a Canaanite is the aggressor animal, then even in that situation, the Canaanite should be exempt, because the pasuk is saying that retribution, or I should say restitution, is made only when it's re'ehu, when it's a fellow Jew, and if the aggressor is a Canaanite, so he doesn't fall under that obligation. He should be exempt, therefore. Ve'i re'ehu lav dafka, and if re'ehu is not taken in a precise, specific format, then afilu d'Yisrael ki nogach d'knaini, then even when the Jewish animal is the aggressor and injures the Canaanite-owned animals, l'chayiv, the Jew should be obligated to compensate, even though the victim is not a re'ehu, because you would be saying that the re'ehu is lav dafka. And yet, the Torah law makes that distinction, that Jewish aggressor, Canaanite victim, Jew is exempt. Canaanite aggressor, Jewish victim, Canaanite is totally obligated. V'dover zeh ein onu modiyim oisei l'malchus. These Roman officials did an act of kindness to the rabbis and said, we are not going to inform the central government about this seeming flaw in the law, which favors the Jews. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda shchiva le barta. Rav Shmuel suffered the death of his daughter, and Omru le Rabbanan leula, the rabbi said to Lukum Nezel min chamei, let us arise and offer comfort to the bereaved parent. Omar Lehu, Ula responded, my isli gabi nechamta de bavloi, de gidufa hu. What am I going to do with the comfort that the Babylonians offer to the bereaved? Their words of comfort, in effect, says Ula, is blasphemy. The Amri, what do the Babylonians say when they comfort the bereaved? They say, "My efshar lemevad, what can you do, or what can we do about it?" That statement is saying that the Almighty decided to take this life. What can we do about it? Leaving room to infer, "Ha efshar lemevad avdi." And if you could have done something about it, you would have done something other than what the Almighty ruled. And Hence Ula's reaction. I'm not going to go along with the Babylonians to offer words of comfort when they, in effect, are saying something from which you can infer blasphemy, questioning God's decisions, God's rulings. Also, Ula Chudoi Gabe. However, Ula went on his own to Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Omar Lay, and Ula said as follows. And here we have a long marking. Ula will hold forth, and you can see that this continues a number of lines down, Omid Beis. Ula, and we feature on the side under our topic heading, under the Nosei, Tanchume Ula al Mois Bita Shereb Shmuel Bar Yehuda, V'Iser Asiyas Milchama Im Moyov. Ula is going to offer words of solace, of comfort, to Rav Shmuel, and as part of his words of comfort, and I say comfort, maybe that you'll see post facto, maybe that's not the best choice of words, but it's the words of Ula to the bereaved include a citation of the prohibition of waging war with the Moabite people. How does this all come together? Well, now let's go see it in the Gemara. So Ula says to Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, "Vayomer Hashem al teitzer es moyav al tizgar bo milchoma." The Almighty commanded, "Do not oppress the people of Moab and do not engage them, do not incite them to war." V'chima ola al daitel shel Moshe la'asos milchoma shelo birshus. The Almighty is speaking, exhorting Moshe, exhorting the Jewish people, do not incite the Moabites into war. What was on his mind that he thought that you could wage war against them without permission? In other words, what thinking was there that without being commanded to, you could wage war against them? Ela nosa Moshe kal v'chomer b'atzmo. Moshe Rabbeinu made his own kal v'chomer, presented his own kal v'chomer logic as follows. Omar, Uma Midyonim, mind you, the Midianite people, Shelobo Lazarus Moyov. In the Torah, we find that the Midianite people came to assist the Moabites. Omra Torah, regarding the Midianites, which are, we'll say that they are secondary in their attempts to we'll say war with the Jews, to do evil to the Jews. They came merely to help Moab. And the Torah says regarding the Midianites, Tsror es ha-Midyonim v'kisem oisam, oppress the Midianites and smite them. So mind you, this subsidiary people, the Jewish people were commanded to smite. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Moyavim atzmam, the Moabites themselves, lo kol shekein, all the more so that there should be no hesitation against initiating a war against the Moabites, who were the chief antagonizers in that particular biblical episode. Omar lo hakodesh baruch hu. So the Almighty says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo k'sh'ol saldaitcha ol saldaitcha, not like you think, that not like occurred to you, is what I am thinking. Sh'tei predos toivos yeshli lehotzi mehen, I have two birds, two, predos is an expression, Rashi says, gozolos, little chicklings, little birds, that I have to bring forth from those peoples. Well, who are the sh'tei predos? Rus hamoyavio, the nama hamoynis. Rus, famous biblical figure, the great grandmother of King David, and Naamah is a woman from the Ammonite people that married King Solomon. From Naamah, there comes forth the Davidic dynasty. V'halo dvarim kal v'chomer, and from this we can draw the following kal v'chomer. Because of two individuals, two chicklings, the Almighty had compassion and preserved these two large nations, Ammon and Moab. Moab, from whom later came Ruth. Ammon, from whom came forth Naamah. The Almighty preserved them and didn't destroy them. So that you have two populous nations, and because of two, regarding each nation, one individual that was going to come forth in later generations, motivated the Almighty to preserve those entire nations. Bito Shel Rabbi, basically, Ula is saying, your daughter, Im Sherohi, if she had been worthy, Uriyahi Lotseis Mimena Dovertoiv, and that something of value was going to come forth from her, even generations later, Alachas Kama Vakama Davachaya, all the more so the Almighty would have preserved her. Therefore, Ula says, in an attempt to explain the ways of God, he says to the bereaved parent, he says you should simply know that nothing of value, nothing good was going to ever come forth from your daughter, and you can rest on the Almighty for having made the decision that he did in taking her. The Gemara, as we go on, has added markings, triangles, under the Nosei Mivne heading on the side. We indicate these are Shtei Droshes Sherab Chia Bar Abba Bivnoi Slot, two teachings of Rab Chia Bar Abba concerning the daughters of Lot. Let's point out that Lot, the nephew of Avram, was the forebearer, the patriarch of the Ammon and Moab peoples, the peoples we just made reference to. When you read the biblical account, you'll see that Lot had engaged in intimacy in his drunken state with his daughters, his elder daughter and his younger daughter. From the elder daughter, there came forth the people of Moab, and from the younger daughter, there came forth the people of Ammon. Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekapeach Sachar Kol Bria. The Almighty does not withhold the reward of any creature. Afilu Sachar Sicha Noah, even reward for choice of proper speech, choice of proper words, refined speech itself is deserving of reward. Where do we see that? The Ilu Bechira, the elder of the two daughters that had become impregnated by her father, when she named her child Dekomra Moav, the name Moav is a name that has a certain, we'll say, Rashi refers to Lashon Pritzis. Pritzis, meaning a vile connotation, whereby she publicly alludes to her having been impregnated by her father. Father-daughter intimacy is obviously a despicable act, and nevertheless she didn't hesitate to publicly refer to her son by the name Moav. That's a poor choice of speech. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, regarding the people that descended from Moav, the Almighty says to Moshe, Al Tetzar Es Moav Al Tizgar Bo Milchoma. The Almighty imposed a restriction regarding Jewish dealings with Moab, Jewish aggression toward Moab, but only in the context of actual war. Milchomahu delo, an actual war, they are restrained, prohibited from initiating against the Moabite people. Ho angaria ovid behu. However, to take Moabite people and enslave them without warfare, that is allowed. Seira, however, the younger of Lot's daughters, Tekomra Ben Ami, in referring to her son, she calls him Ben Ami. Omar Leah Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, Almighty commanded Moshe, V'kiraftemu b'nei Amon al tetzureim v'al tizgar bom. klal. Do not oppress them, do not incite them at all. No reference to milchoma in the context of Ammon. De'afilu angaria lo savadbu, even enslavement you shall not practice over the Ammonite people. So that the Ammonite people have additional protection because their matriarch, their forebearer, chose to speak in more refined terms and didn't speak in such such bold terms as her elder sister. V'yomer Abchiya bar Abba, Omer Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha, li'olam yakdim adam l'dvar mitzvah. Rabbi Chiya says, in the name of Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha, a person should always strive to fulfill a mitzvah at the earliest possible time. Shebishvil laylo achas shekodmasa b'chiru tzira kodmasa arba doris l'Yisrael. Here is an interesting, let's say, turnaround or twist, in that in our previous drasha number one, we saw criticism of the elder daughter. Here, there's actually a word of complimentary word concerning the elder daughter of Lot, in so far as she thought. Now, one has to just recount that particular episode where Sodom and the accompanying four cities were destroyed by the Almighty. They, the daughters of Lot, thought that that was the end of humanity, and it was upon them to preserve humanity, and the only male in their vicinity was their father. So they acted in what they perceived to be a righteous deed, a righteous act. Call it let's simply describe it as that, as we just said, that in their minds they were fulfilling a mitzvah. So we find that the elder daughter, she went first. She acted with greater alacrity than her younger daughter, and that is seen by the fact that she had intimacy with her father the night before the younger daughter did so. So that in reward for that one night that she acted before in a more rapid fashion than her younger sister, Shebishvil Laila Achas Shekidmasa Bechira Letzira, the Gemara says that the elder daughter merited having amongst her descendants four generations of Jews before there was a descendant from her younger sister from the Ammon people to appear as a member of the Jewish people. And who are the four generations of Jews? Well, starting before we do any counting, Rus, also known as Ruth, had converted to Judaism, and she had a son, Oved. In turn, a son, Oved, produced Yishai, who produced David, who produced Shlomo. So you have four generations born to a descendant of Moav, the Elu Tzira. But with regard to the younger daughter of Lot, who, we'll say, waited a night to be with her father, Ad Rechavam, we don't find a member of the Jewish people coming forth from Ammon until the birth of Rechavam. Rechavam's mother was referred to before, Naamo Ho'amoinis. So Rechavam was also the son of Shlomo, who produced Rechavam with Naamo. So that the appearance of a descendant from Ammon in the Jewish people was not seen until Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, and hence only after four generations of Moav already having Jews being descended from them, from the Moav people. The Gemara says, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vishem Imo, the name of Rechavam's mother. Rechavam was the son of Shlomo. His mother's name was Naamo Ho'amoinis. Naamo, who was a convert from the Ammon people. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a note on the side. The Nosei reads as follows. Shor shel kusi, the ox of a kusi. What we'll see the ox of a kusi being either aggressor or victim. But kusi is a reference in this Gemara to a member of a people that joined the ranks of the Jewish people, and there's a question regarding the authenticity of their conversion. So the Gemara says, "Ton Rabbanan Shor Shel Yisrael Shenagav Shor Shel Kusi Potter." Jewish aggressor animal damages Kusi owned animal. The Jew is exempt from compensating. V'shel Kusi Shenagav Shor Shel Yisrael. If a Kusi animal gores and damages a Jewish owned animal. Tam Mishalim Chatzi Nezek Umud Mishalim Nezek Sholem. The docile version of the Kusi animal will pay half damages. The Muad animal that's already demonstrated its proclivity toward gorings will pay full damages. Rabbi Meir Omer, Shor Shel Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shel Kusi Potter. V'Shel Kusi Shenogach Shor Shel Yisrael Bein Tam Bein Muad Mishalim Nezek Sholem. Let's highlight the machlokas, the point of difference between Rabbi Meir and the Tanakhama. And we focus on our dashed underlines. According to the Tanakhama, the Kusi Tam animal, damaging Jewish animal, pays half damages. According to Rabbi Meir, the Kusi Tam animal that damages Jewish-owned animal, Kusi will pay full damages. The position of Rabbi Meir leads us into the Gemara's question. You notice we have a long question marking. And on the side of the Gemara, there are Nosei, Mivneh Henning, the double underline highlights Rabbi Meir. And what we're going to be looking at now is Biur Shitas Rabbi Meir, Bahagdoras Kusim. We want to clarify, want to figure out what is Rabbi Meir's shita with regard to the kusim. What are the possibilities? One is Aleph Geirei Aroyas, that they are converts as a result of fear of having of the threat posed to them by lions, so that their conversion was a conversion that was not authentic. It was simply out of fear, and hence they're called Geirei Aroyas, the converts as a result of the lions. Oh, Geirei Emes, the other possibility is that they are sincere, full-fledged Geirim. Now, just by looking at the Gemara and our markings, focusing on the double underline where we highlight Rabbi Meir's name, initially it appears that Rabbi Meir says Kusim Geirei Aroyas, and that's what we've highlighted with the dashed underline. Later, the next time the double underline highlights Rabbi Meir, it appears Kusim Geirei Emesheim. Now we have to make sense of this. So as we completed the Tanaic source wherein Rabbi Meir said the Kusi-owned animal, even if it's docile, will have to pay full damages to the Jewish animal that is the victim of its goring, Lameimra, the Sova Rabbi Meir Kusim Geirei Aroyas Heim. This would suggest that the Kusim are converts out of fear of lions, meaning that their conversion is not recognized as a conversion. Hence, they're viewed as idol worshippers. And we saw already that an idol worshipper whose animal gores a Jewish-owned animal, the idol worshipper must offer full compensation, even if the animal is tam. Ah, Bevaramini, we now raise a contradiction to this conclusion concerning Rabbi Meir's position regarding the Kusim from the following Tanaic source. Now, the following Tanaic source does not deal with damages. It deals with a totally different realm. The general realm has to do with the laws of Nida, the menstruant woman. But more specifically, we're dealing with fabrics or items on which there appears a blood stain. We'll say a female blood stain. Let us say ahead of time that on a strictly Torah level, the idea of blood being a source of defilement is something that is unique to the Jewish people. Gentiles, heathens, idol worshippers, their blood, their, we'll say, female-related blood, blood stains on garments, do not present themselves as a source of defilement. So that when it comes to straight-out nochrim, blood, which is referred to in our Gemara by the word ksamim, kesem is a blood stain. The blood of nochrim is tor, the blood of female Jews is tome. What about the kusim? Viraminu. Kol haksamim haboim merekem. Rekem is the name of a place. All the stains that come from Rekem, a city that was the majority of whom were heathens. So blood that comes from Rekem is tohar. Rabbi Yehuda mitame. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says that it is capable of defiling. Mitnei shem gerim v'toyim. Most of them, the people in Rekem, were actually converts, but they have gone astray. So that they're basically, they had people in Rekem had converted. That makes them Jews. The fact that later they behave in a rebellious, wayward fashion, avoiding Torah observance, doesn't remove them from being of Jewish status. So their blood, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a source of tumah. Mibain hanochrim torim, blood stains that come from women, found on women's garments that come from amongst the heathens, so they are tohar. Mibain Yisrael, or mibain hakusim, Rabbi Meir metame, vachomim metarin. Blood stains that come from amongst the Jews or amongst the kusim, according to Rabbi Meir, those blood stains will defile. And you can see we've highlighted key words with markings. We've highlighted Rabbi Meir, we've dashed underlined his name, and you see kusim metame. The chachamim are metahir shelo nechshedu al kismayim. The chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir and hold that if they had real, let's say, nidah, menstruant blood stains, they would not have been so loose and so free with them so as to fall into the public domain. What we want to focus though on is Shitas Rabbi Meir and how he views the kusim. What do we see from this? Alma, we see from this Kosova Rabbi Meir kusim gerei emesheim, that their original conversion to Judaism was a genuine conversion. And that's manifest by Rabbi Meir saying that the ksamim, the bloodstains found on women's garments from amongst the kusim, is a source of defilement like Jews. We have a house marking that you'll see appears in an alternating direction, and we've indicated on the side of the Gemara that this alternating direction is lahokyal al-makav, is to make it easier to follow the give and take of the Gemara. So we've raised a question. Omar Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo responds, and he'll tell us that Rabbi Meir holds that kusim are basically gerei emes. The question then is, what about Rabbi Meir's position regarding the kusi tam having to pay full damages when a Jewish animal is injured, is damaged? Omar Rabbi Avo, knasu shekonas Rabbi Meir b'mamonam. Shaliyatamu bohem. Rabbi Meir says that the rabbis imposed a knas, a fine, upon their property, upon their items, so as to distance them from the Jews, so that they should feel separate from the Jews. The kusim, even though their original conversion was genuine, nevertheless, as time went on, they were people that did not follow the Torah in a Torah spirit at all. They were sinners, and it was to the advantage of the rank and file Jewish people that these kusim should stay away. So this would serve as a deterrent to the kusim from mingling amongst the Jews, knowing that if their animal, even if it's a docile animal, that damages a Jewish-owned animal, that they'll have to pay full damages, it's better for us, would a kusi would think, to stay away from the Jews. So we would accomplish shelo yitamu b'hem, they shouldn't get mixed in amongst the Jewish people. Mosiv Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera questions Rabbi Avol's explanation. He cites a Tanaic source which says, "Ve'elu naros sheyesh lahem knas," a girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half that is raped. So the Torah mandates a fine of 50 pieces of silver that must be paid to the father of the girl. Which naros, reference to the girls that are raped, warrant a knas, fine, being paid? Habo al hamamzeres v'al nesina v'al akusis. One who rapes an illegitimate girl, a nesina, a girl coming from the nesinim, another people that attempted to join the Jewish people, and the al hakusis. What we want to focus on right now is simply the Torah, the halacha expectation that if a kusis girl is raped, you shall pay. You have to pay her father. If, as Rabbi Avol said, that a fine was imposed upon the kusis to keep them away, to feel it's not worth our while to be amongst the Jews, so too in this case, the kusi family should lose out on receiving the knas. There should be no knas paid in the case of the kusi girl that is raped. That would be in the spirit of what Rabbi Avol was trying to teach. And yet you see this Tanaic source. Rabbi Avol, of course, was an Amora. Here you have a Tanaic source that does not seem to hold of that, we'll say, that philosophy or that theory that Rabbi Avol was trying to advance. The Gemara responds that this Rabbi Zera's question is not a question. Omar Abaye, Kidei, we continue at the top of Daf Lamed Tes, Sheloyeh Chayte Niskar. The case of the knas that is paid upon the rape of the kusi doesn't represent a challenge to Rabbi Avol, but rather, in the case of a rape, we want to make sure that the sinner, rape is a sin, that the sinner does not benefit. Can you imagine that he would rape a kusis girl and not have to pay? He would be a sinner that benefits. So that Abaye says that the reason that there is payment in the case of the kusi girl that's raped is shelo yehe chote niskar. The Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, that that there is a payment to the kusi girl's father simply to make it such that a sinner doesn't feel a sense of reward, v'nesve la'aniyim, let the money that the rapist owes be paid to the poor, why is it paid to her father? Omar Rav Mori, if you would take that approach, let the payment be made to the poor, it'll never be made. Mishum Dahavi Momon She'en Lo Toivim. Money that's earmarked for the poor is considered money that doesn't have any specific claimers of it. What do we mean by that? If you ordered the rapist to pay the poor, and a poor man comes and says, you know, well, you owe the poor money, give it to me, the rapist will say, I'm not paying you, I'm paying some other oni. And he'll do that again and again, and end up never paying. So that is not a suggestion at all. However, as far as the end of the Gemara is concerned, Rabbi Avol's explanation of Rabbi Meir stands And by the way, marking-wise, you can see that when we presented Rabbi Yavoh, there was a house marking with the point facing up, and we end up with a house marking in the same direction, indicating that Rabbi Yavoh's explanation of Rabbi Meir, that essentially the kusim are geri emes, and the reason for the kusi animal the aggressive kusi animal, even if it's a tam, having to pay nezek shalem, is a knas, a fine that was imposed so as to keep them away from the rank and file Jewish people. As we explained earlier, they were, even though their original conversion might have been authentic, but they ended up being a population of sinners. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.